Well, greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Law Hours Editorial Review. The Editorial Review is sponsored by Truth Radio Network. It's an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hours Editorial Review is heard nationally on KU Band Radio at Telstar 5, 7 days a week on Truth Radio Network and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Editorial Review and the Gordon Law School, please go to my website. It's georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, and in the light of Bible prophecy, biblical law, and scriptural history. So stay tuned for tonight's special reports right after this message. You know, we Americans are the most litigious people in the world, and we believe in our lawyers with a kind of religious fervor, and we're taught from early childhood that he who represents himself in court has a fool for a client. But what would you say if a plumber said that? What if a plumber said, he who fixes his own pipes has a fool for a client? What if a carpenter said that? He who fixes his own steps has a fool for a client. Now, doesn't our common sense tell us that a plumber or a carpenter who couldn't fix his own pipes or steps is incompetent? You know, my common sense tells me that a lawyer who couldn't represent himself has to be just as incompetent as that plumber or that carpenter. Now listen to James Nielsen. He's a professor at the Hastings Law School. When he said, quote, it is a fact that a student can graduate from this largest law school in the United States without ever having written a pleading, a contract, a will, a promissory note, or a deed. That's worse than that. Most students graduate from this law school without ever having seen a real honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, promissory note, or a deed, and a student can graduate without having set foot in a courtroom and without ever having spoken to or on behalf of a person in need of advice or counsel. And a student can graduate from this law school without once being exposed to the operation of the rules of court. Now, whatever else may be said about this license issued by the state bar, let it be said that for these students and for their clients, it is a cruel hoax. That's Professor James Nielsen of the Hastings Law School. Maybe that's why lawyers hire a lawyer to defend them, because they're incompetent. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call me at 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Now, Courtroom Strategy and Procedure is available on compact disc for home education. That's not free of charge. And if you're online, you can go to my website. It's georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine. Send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Well, it appears that in the economy, we're probably suffering from a thing called stagflation. That was a term that was first coined back in the recession of 1973-74. From the National Investor, I'm going to keep my general market comments fairly brief here, the editor says. I'll have more to say in the May issue, which I hope to finish over the weekend, about the recent accelerated blow-off in commodities and commodity-related shares. But suffice it to say for now that, as I warned in last Friday's email, the continuing danger in these areas has manifested itself rather spectacularly this week. Yesterday morning's initial report on America's gross national product had stagflation written all over it. Coming in initially at 4.2%, the growth rate reported for the first quarter was considerably less than had been expected. Further, were it not for the most significant presence of war-related spending in a year, the number would have been even less. Now, in my opinion, we're already witnessing the beginning of the end of the stimulus-induced recovery. Year-over-year earnings growth has peaked in the first quarter, and in the quarters to come, it will move back down. One of the reasons for this, as was also revealed yesterday morning, is that the months-long rise in commodity prices has had its effect in muting reported growth rates, and at least in some areas, already the aforementioned earnings. What the rise in commodities has also done is to move Fed Chairman Greenspan's favorite indicator of inflation, the GDP deflator, markedly higher, coming in at a 3.2% annualized rate. So it puts that much more upward pressure on long-term interest rates as well as on the Fed itself to act sooner rather than later to raise short-term interest rates. That, as I also said last Friday, is something the Fed is still loath to do if it can be avoided. Ironically, the spike in long-term rates, which has taken the bellwether 10-year note from recent lows of around 3.7% to a brief peak yesterday morning of 4.6%, has by itself served to throw at least a little cold water on any future growth and thus inflation expectations. Further, the plunge in most commodity prices, with energy continuing to be the most notable exception, also has taken some of the steam out of inflation concerns. That longer term, it really should not, is for now lost on the markets. Now, adding icing to the cake that the Fed's Open Market Committee will have in front of it when it gathers next Tuesday, all the talk, or in at least some circles, hysteria and panic about China acting to slow an overheating economy also takes some pressure off of price inflation. So, though it is certain to change its language of the recent past and take another baby step or two closer, possibly, raising short-term interest rates, the Fed might not be as aggressive in this direction as many expect. They'll tell us instead that higher prices for energy and other commodities have themselves led to a moderation of growth, and they'll point to continued slack elsewhere, most notably in the labor market. And finally, they'll tell us that there is still no reason for them to be hasty in raising rates when the markets in the above fashion have to some extent done the Fed's work for it. Now, one other reason that I believe this is most likely to be the Fed's message is because they do not want the dollar, already up about 10% as measured by the U.S. dollar index from its mid-February low. They don't want it to rally any further. The U.S. dollar index has for all this week been flat, lining right on its 200-day moving average. If it were to break significantly above this, it would result in much more damage being done to virtually everything that benefited from the greenback's decline. And on this score, I think Greenspan and company will say enough is enough and not say or do anything that would risk a further rise. Now, speaking of not risking any further rises in the value of the dollar, the 10-year Treasury touched and then retreated from a key level yesterday morning. The 4.6% yield level on this security was previously the closing high for 2003. A break above this, just as will be the case if the dollar were to break out of the upside, would cause a cascade of activity that would result in either or both soaring uncontrollably. Here again, this is something the Fed does not want. This does not mean that long-term yields will move higher down the road. I still tend to believe they will. But in the near term, there's a better than even chance that perhaps precipitated by the kind of outcome I expect from the Federal Open Market Committee, next week we'll see long rates flutter back down for a while longer. Remember, this entire charade is being orchestrated for the upcoming election. We're on a knife's edge in the economy, and not just ours, but worldwide. When the American economy collapses, the world economy collapses with it and will usher in all probability, I firmly believe, the mark of the beast. All right, we'll keep our eyes on that for you. Now take a look at this. Inflation hits the family dinner table. After years of stability, prices rise on key items, hitting pocketbooks and the economy. This is the effect now of that 25% inflation rate that was engineered in 2003. And the 30% inflation rate that's being engendered here in 2004. So that means that last year the government increased the money supply by 25% and 30% this year. We're beginning to see that money hit the marketplace, and of course inflation is the natural result. This isn't anything new, but when this inflation hits us in the year 2005, we'll see double digits. 20% inflation rates like we did in the late 1970s. Now, that's scary. And anybody that has dollar-denominated investments should take notice today and then take action in the morning. Well, many of life's necessities are becoming more expensive. Let's start with the breakfast. Eggs are up 5.2% so far this year. Butter for your bread up 62%, a glass of 2% milk to wash it all down, and it may rise as much as 50 cents a gallon next month. Time to head to work, filling up the gas tank now costs 30 cents a gallon more than it did in January. And after more than a decade of quiescence, inflation is returning, eating away at family pocketbooks and rippling through almost every segment of the American economy. The latest evidence came Thursday when the government reported that the first quarter gross domestic product grew at a steady 4.2% rate. But inflation virtually doubled from 1.2% annually at the end of 2003 to 2% now. And the rate would have been much higher if it were not for some big ticket items, such as automobiles and computers, which came down in price. In fact, in the category most families would relate to, food and gasoline prices rose at a 5.3% annual rate. Now, those numbers echo the more widely watched Consumer Price Index, which shows inflation running at 5.1% annually. Those are the highest numbers since 1990. Keep in mind that the Consumer Price Index runs at about half the real inflation. Now, the inflationary pressures could well lead to the end of a historically low period of interest rates, although no immediate rate hike is expected when the Federal Reserve meets next week. Analysts believe inflation is reaching the point where the central bank will signal that it will increase rates early this summer. The stock market, anticipating such a move, has already been spooked in recent days. Yes, inflation starting to creep up, but still creeping, says David Weiss, chief economist at Standard & Poor's in New York. It's time for the Fed to start thinking about raising rates, but not panicking about it. Consumer prices have started to pick up in particular in the past 3 months. Before that, U.S. companies facing competition from abroad had absorbed most of the price increases. Now, however, the dollar is weaker. Asian companies are expanding. Hang on. Back more on the inflation when we return. You're listening to the Editorial Review. The editorial review is sponsored by Truth Radio Network as a public service. Truth Radio is committed to providing our listening audience with information and understanding in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the editorial review is archived for your listening convenience on the internet at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. You know, those who already walk submissively will say that there's no cause for alarm, but submissiveness is not our heritage. The First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage, and the Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people, and the Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and expression of the press, of political and social activities free from government surveillance. That was Justice William O. Douglas of our Supreme Court that made that observation. Now, you know, our princes and our politicians beller in the halls of Congress for more taxes, more spending, and more gun control. But you and I haven't heard anything intelligent come out of a politician's mouth in more than 75 years. And that's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from our courts, not the political process. Certainly not from the politicians, the lawyers, or the bureaucrats. You know, old Mayor Rothschild summed it up with a flair when he said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws. Well, give me the judicial power, and I care not who makes the laws either, because the real power in America is in our courts, not in our political process." Now, if you'd like to tap into that power of the courts, why don't you call me here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. And while you're at it, be sure to ask for the free general law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, it's educational, informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. And Courtroom Strategy and Procedure, now, the school, is available on compact disc for home education as well as education here at the law school. If you're online, you can go to my website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email. Send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Now, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, going on with the report on consumer prices, that is, inflation. Consumer prices have started to pick up, in particular, in the last 3 months. Before that, U.S. companies, facing competition from abroad, had absorbed most of the price increases without passing those prices on to their consumers. But now, however, the dollar is weaker, and Asian economies are expanding, and the modest acceleration of price increases reflects the welcome revival of pricing power, and not the beginning of a problematic inflation, says Clifford Waldman. He's an economist for the Manufacturers Alliance in Arlington, Virginia. And unlike other inflationary periods, economists say there are some unusual twists this time. The U.S. economy is now more attuned to the global economy. And last year, for example, the prices of imports fell. So far this year, they're up 2% and probably going higher. Now, one reason for the higher import prices is rising inflation in China. The Chinese have become major buyers around the world of everything from scrap metal to waste paper. They're now buyers of one-third of all of the aluminum produced in the world. They don't have the margins to play with, so they're passing on their higher commodity prices to their exports. China may be planning to do something about its booming economy. On Wednesday, Reuters reported that Chinese premier, in an interview, indicated the country may need to slow things down to moderate inflation. This news dropped the price of gold, aluminum, and other metals. Consumers may have noticed the higher prices this spring when they shop for new clothes, most of which are made in China. at the Village Finery, a boutique in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Prices are up 5 to 8%. Even the more throwaway types of clothes that you wear for the backyard barbecue are up in price. For more and most consumers, the closest encounter with inflation comes when they go to the grocery store, particularly the dairy section. Now, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, butter has gone from $2.84 a pound to $3.46. Milk is actually down from the beginning of the year, but it will probably go up again soon, since wholesale prices are slated to rise 50 cents a gallon in May. Behind the rise in dairy products is a 1.8% reduction in the nation's cow population. Dairy farmers, with the lowest prices in history in 2002, started reducing their herd sizes when beef prices started rising. At the same time, the U.S., concerned about mad cow disease, cut off imports of dairy cows from Canada. It's typical of an inelastic product. Small changes have a greater impact on price, says Mary Coe Ledman, a dairy economist in Libertyville, Illinois. And it could be worse. Most businesses are absorbing the price hikes in order to keep their customers. Now, take Il Forno, a restaurant on Manhattan's Upper West Side. Joe and Mike Cahill sell ham and egg sandwiches for $2.50. Now, they used to make good money on these sandwiches, but in the past year, the price of eggs went from $20 a case to $40 a case, while the price of ham climbed from 42 cents a pound to 56. Even the bread became more expensive. Now, we're probably losing money on each sandwich, says Joe Cahill, who has not taken a salary in 8 months to help keep the restaurant in business. But the customers won't pay more. And yet other stores are starting to pass on part of their higher costs. That's the case at Schlaller and Weber. It's a delicatessen on Manhattan's Upper East Side. The chickens have gone up like crazy. Pork prices are going up. The bacon is through the roof now, says Chris Cunningham. He's the manager, who notes the store passes on about 75% of these higher costs to customers. One place where higher prices have become evident quickly is a Papaya King on the East Side. The store, which sells about 1,500 hot dogs a day, has increased prices 4 times in the past 14 months. Next up, higher prices for soft drinks. We have to stay competitive within the fast food price range, says Alexander Paulos. He's the general manager. All right, you can expect more of the same. What's going on here is that the government is stimulating the economy. When we stimulate the economy, we put out more dollars. When we put out more dollars, it makes all the dollars in circulation cheaper. And that's where reality's at. Well, last week in Afghanistan, a tragedy occurred. Last week's death in Afghanistan of professional football player turned Army Ranger Pat Tillman was a horrible tragedy. The real noteworthiness of his death lay not so much in his occupation prior to enlisting in the Army, but rather in his willingness to do what so many in America today are not willing to do, and that is to lift a finger. Well, Tillman's death brought to mind two recent emails that I've received, and the first featured pictures of presidential candidate John Kerry's several mansions. Kerry, who relentlessly proclaims solidarity with America's downtrodden proletarian masses, comes from old New England money. However, he refuses to sell his mansions and other assets, donate the proceeds to the poor and the disenfranchised, move into a studio apartment in South Boston, and ride the bus to work in the morning. And his critics rightfully point this out, that it is nothing but sheer hypocrisy. Now, the second email showed an American soldier with an American flag, a patch on his shoulder, and beneath that American flag patch is a patch reading, "Doing the work of." And then beneath this second patch are the patches of France, Germany, and Russia. And to his credit, the sender of this email was a retired Army, or excuse me, a retired Air Force Master Sergeant. However, so many people who prefer this kind of opinions in favor of the Iraq War have never lifted a finger to do one day of military service. Now, many of the people pulling the policy strings, such as Cheney, Ashcroft, Pearl, Wolfowitz, Bremer, as well as many of the people doing the loudest cheerleading in both the War on Terror and the War on Iraq, such as Limbaugh, Hannity, O'Reilly, and Bennett, have exactly zero military experience. Now, if nothing else, John Kerry went to Vietnam as a Navy officer rather than take the Yalies way out by joining the National Guard. Well, rather than doing what Pat Tillman did, walk away from a promising and lucrative professional football career to serve in the military, millions of Americans feel it sufficient to support the troops by sitting in their recliners and flying the flag on the front porch, cheering them on as if they were their favorite football team. They whine endlessly about the non-cooperation of the French, Germans, and Russians, and they're either indifferent about or supportive of a return to the military draft next year. They think bumper stickers saying Iraq first, then France, are rip-roaringly funny. They would have no problem with vaporizing Spain because Los Estupidos over there voted for candidates who promised to pull Spanish troops out of Iraq. They equate failure to deify Bush Almighty with treason. But when you suggest that they live the way they speak, they ask why you question their personal life. They insist that the person and personnel, the lives of Bill Clinton, John Kerry, Ted Kennedy, why shouldn't the personal lives of Republicans matter? No party has a monopoly on hypocrisy. America's foreign policy is a failure. Our insistence on intervening in every last country in the world has sparked resentment and outright hatred of America and Americans throughout the world. Contrary to the neocon line, America is not universally loved. It is this widespread hatred of America's heavy-handed foreign policy, and not some misunderstanding of our freedom and democracy, that led to the horrors of September the 11th. We need to pull our troops home and stop this nonsense. Pat Tillman was one of thousands of Americans dying in vain in pursuit of, let's be blunt, empire and oil, like the Roman Empire of old, conquest. Sadly, the huge majority of our men and women in uniform think they're doing the right thing. They've been brainwashed into this thinking. This is done by the public school system and the media. Well, I enlisted in the Naval Reserve in 1982 thinking I was defending America. However, as years went by, I became a troublemaker. My military records were excellent. I was recommended for officer several times. However, the more I read the Constitution that I had sworn to support and defend against all enemies, foreign and domestic, the more I began to question just what the military was up to. Indeed, the very government that was cutting my paycheck had become one of these enemies. People ask me about the Navy. I tell them that I love the Navy, but I do not love how it's being used or what it's being used for. It is an instrument of national offense rather than of national defense. And with this in mind, let us once again call the Department of Defense by its original name. It used to be called the War Department. It would be far more accurate and a whole lot more honest. America's military budget is equal to the sum of the world's next nine largest military budgets combined. Logically, nobody ought to be screwing with us. Yet everyone is screwing with us, and why is that? Well, because we insist on screwing with them. You cannot throw your weight around to the extent that America does and have everybody love you. It didn't work for the Romans I'm not sure that it's going to work for us. Did you ever stop to think that just maybe things are not exactly as the neocon spin machine tells us it is? And did you ever stop to think that just maybe a sinister clique really does pull the strings? And why are we bogged down in a quagmire that has a military budget that is 1/200th of ours? You know, for those of you from the deep side of the river, I'm talking about Iraq. It just doesn't make any sense. Now, if you feel as strongly as you say you do in favor of America's military doings around the world, do what Pat Tillman did. Join the Army. Leave your middle-class existence here in America and join the military. And if America's military won't have you, and no doubt some other country's military will take you, as an American, you're entitled to your opinion. However, this does not mean that your opinion is worth anything. Quit speaking in the first person about how we ought to bomb the crap out of this country and we ought to pulverize that country. Instead, why don't you put down your remote and then tell the boss you won't be in tomorrow. Then grab your M16 and head for Fallujah or Kandahar. Or just shut up. That's quite a statement. That's Doug Newman. All right, Doug, thank you so much for writing in. I think you had a good point. Closer. You're listening to the Editorial Review. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Editorial Review is sponsored by Truth Radio Network. It's an educational service in the public interest. Your support of Truth Radio and of our advertisers and sponsors is very important to us. So for more information about Truth Radio Network programming, please go to the website at truthradio.com. It's truthradio.com. Truth Radio Network is a private volunteer organization. We're established as a private charitable trust for the purpose of exercising and defending free speech. Truth Radio is not a 501c3 tax-exempt institution, so donations are not tax-deductible. And, of course, if they were tax-deductible, then we'd be controlled by some government agency, like the FCC or the Securities and Exchange Commission or somebody else. So we rely upon the financial support that comes from our listening audience to help us pay for that satellite time, internet, audio streaming, and overhead costs that comes from people just like you. And we want to thank you for your financial support, and if you are not supporting us, would you? It comes through your donations to Truth Radio, here at P.O. Box 344, Napomo, California, 93444. Again, that's Truth Radio. P.O. Box 344, Napomo, N-I-P-O-M-O, California, 93444. All right, here's tonight's wise old saying. That guy is so clumsy that he got his screw caught in a thumb driver. All right, let's see what we're talking about over here. Finished up on the last guy over here, this guy Tillman. It's quite a little story. Ever heard of MSG? MSG is a food additive. You'll find it most often in Chinese restaurants. Oftentimes, my wife, when she goes into a Chinese restaurant, will ask them, "Do you have MSG in your food?" And you'll find now quite a few of these Chinese restaurants have stopped putting MSG into the food. Now, what is MSG? Well, not only is MSG scientifically proven to cause obesity, It is an addictive substance. It's what's known as nicotine for food. Several months ago, John Erb took his book and his concerns to one of the highest government health officials in Canada. And while sitting in the government office, the official told him, "Sure, I know how bad MSG is. I wouldn't touch the stuff." But this same top-level government official refused to tell the public what he knew about MSG. Now, if you're one of the few who can still believe that MSG is good for us, and you don't believe what John Erb has to say, then why don't you go see for yourself and go to the National Library of Medicine. That's www.pubmed.com. It's an easy one. www.pubmed.com. Just type in the words MSG, obese, O-B-E-S-E, and then read a few of the 115 medical studies that appear. Now, the hidden sources of MSG in foods from the book Excitotoxins, The Taste That Kills by Dr. Russell Blaylock, MD. What if someone were to tell you that a chemical, MSG, added to food could cause brain damage in your children, and that this chemical could affect how your children's nervous systems form during development so that in later years they may have learning or emotional difficulties? What if there was scientific evidence that these chemicals could permanently damage a critical part of the brain known to control hormones so that later in your child's life, your child might have endocrine problems? Then how would you feel? And suppose evidence was presented to you strongly suggesting that the artificial sweetener in your diet soft drink may cause brain tumors to develop, and that the number of brain tumors reported since the introduction of this widespread introduction of artificial sweetener has risen dramatically. Would that affect your decision to drink these products and especially to allow your children to drink them? What if you could be shown overwhelming evidence that one of the main ingredients in this sweetener, called aspartate, could cause the same brain lesions as MSG? Would that affect your buying decisions? And finally, what if it could be demonstrated that all of these types of chemicals called excitotoxins could possibly aggravate or even precipitate many of today's epidemic neurodegenerative brain diseases such as Parkinson's disease, Huntington's disease, ALS, and Alzheimer's disease? Would you be concerned? Would you buy the product? If you knew that these excitotoxin food additives are a particular risk, if you have diabetes or have ever had a stroke, brain injury, brain tumor, seizures, or have suffered from hypertension, meningitis, or viral encephalitis, would you also be upset to learn that many of the brain lesions caused by these products in your children are irreversible and can result from a single exposure to these products in sufficient concentration? How would you feel when you learn the food industry hides and disguises these excitotoxin additives, MSG and aspartate, so that they can't be recognized? Would you be incredulous? Would you be enraged? Well, the fact is that many foods are labeled as having no MSG, but in fact not only contain MSG, but they're also laced with other excitotoxins of equal potency and danger. And all of the above are true, and all of these well-known brain toxins are poured into our food and drink by the thousands of tons to boost sales. These additives have no other purpose other than to enhance the taste of food and the sweetness of various diet products. Now, hidden sources of MSG, as discussed previously, the glutenate, MSG manufacturers, and the processed food industries are always on a quest to disguise the MSG added to your food. Now, below is a partial list of the most common names for disguised MSG. So the label doesn't say MSG, but we have other names to cover it up. That's so that you won't figure it out. Remember also that the powerful excitotoxins, aspartate and L-cysteine, are frequently added to foods and, according to FDA rules, require no labeling at all. Food additives that always contain MSG are monosodium glutamate, hydrolyzed vegetable protein, hydrolyzed protein, hydrolyzed plant protein, plant protein extract, sodium succinate, calcium succinate, yeast extract, textured protein including TVP, autolyzed yeast, hydrolyzed oat flour, corn oil, and food additives that frequently contain MSG, malt extract, malt flavoring, bouillon, broth, stock, flavoring, natural flavorings, flavoring, natural beef or chicken flavoring, seasoning, and spices. Food additives that may contain MSG or excitotoxins are carrageenan, enzymes, soy protein concentrate, soy protein isolate, whey protein concentrate, and also protease enzymes of various sources can release excitotoxin amino acids from food proteins, aspartame, an intense source of excitotoxins. Aspartame is a sweetener made from two amino acids. And the excitotoxin aspartate, it should be avoided at all costs. Aspartame complaints accounts for approximately 70% of all complaints to the FDA. It is implicated in everything from blindness to headaches and convulsions. And it is sold under dozens of brand names such as NutraSweet and Equal. Aspartame breaks down within 20 minutes at room temperature into several primary toxic and dangerous ingredients. When ingested, it converts to a near duplicate of a powerful brain tumor-causing agent. Formic acid, called ant venom, formaldehyde, embalming fluid, and methanol, which causes blindness. Extremely dangerous substance, and some common examples are diet soft drinks, sugar-free gum, sugar-free Kool-Aid, Crystal Light, children's medications, and thousands of other products claiming to be low-calorie, diet, or sugar-free. And a final note, Dr. Blaylock recounted a meeting with a senior executive in the food additive industry, who told him point blank that these excitotoxins are going to be in our food no matter how many name changes are necessary. Hey, that ought to tell you not to buy that crap out of the supermarket. No, I've said for many years that there is nothing in the supermarket that is fit for human consumption. And if there is, it is so well hidden and so well disguised that you'll never find it in a supermarket. All right, we got a couple of minutes left here. Let's see if we got a quickie here. You know, Melon Manalup in Florida. It's one of the nation's wealthiest towns, and it will soon have cameras and computers running background checks on every car and driver that passes through town. Police Chief Clay Walker said cameras will take infrared photos recording a car's license number, and then software will automatically run the numbers through law enforcement databases. A 911 dispatcher is alerted if the car is stolen or if the car is the subject of a be on the lookout for warning. Next to the tag number, police will have a picture of the driver taken with another set of cameras, upgraded versions of the standard surveillance cameras already in place. If there is a robbery, police will be able to comb records to determine who drove through town on a given afternoon or evening. Courts have ruled that in a public area you have no expectation of privacy, said Walker, and he's one of 11 sworn officers who protects Manalapan's 321 residents. Still, Walker says Manalapan's data will be destroyed every 3 months. Back with more on the Israel Freedom.